At a time when investors are confronted with market volatility and a variety of challenges fueled by the uncertainty of inflation, unsettled geopolitical tensions, and economic pressures, Justin Klein and Steve Peasley stand ready to take your finance and investment questions and share their unbiased answers. This is InvestTalk, independent thinking, shared success. InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. The clarity for your path forward starts now. Here is KPP Chief Executive Officer, Financial Advisor, Justin Klein.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to another episode of InvestTalk. My name is Luke Guerrero, and I will be your host over this next hour. And today is Monday, April 8th, 2024, also known as Eclipse Day. For those of you who were lucky enough to be in the path, I know I was not fortunate enough to be in the path this time. I hope you were able to get outside and take a look at it with glasses. I hope you didn't stare directly into the sun, because if you did, you might not be able to watch today's episode on YouTube, where we post our show daily, so that, unfortunately, you have to see myself and Justin's faces. But fortunately for you, you will get to see the charts and the data and everything we look at when we answer your finance and investment questions. Now, before we get to those questions, it is time to announce the winning company of our tournament. The matchup today was Cytokinetics, CYTK, a biotech company, versus EQH, Equitable Holdings, a financial services company. And the winner was Cytokinetics, the biotech name coming in on top of the whole tournament. I know you're all excited to hear about who won this tournament, and we will bring that to you later this week, so stay tuned. Either tomorrow or Wednesday, where we will have the winner of that tournament, as well as maybe a little bit of information about why we did this and what this tells us about the market broadly. Now, to ensure you are in the loop on who won that tournament, like I said, do not forget to tune in tomorrow and Wednesday. With that said, we'll talk about the market performance today, as well as run down some show topics a little bit later on, but after we get to our first caller question now.
Hey, Steve and Justin, it is Art from Tucson. I'm calling about Centrus Energy Corp, LEU, wondering if I should pick up more for the long term or if it's time to get out of the stock. Thanks, and I'll listen on the podcast.
So Centrus Energy Corp, LEU, is a nuclear services company. They provide fuel and other services to reactors. There was a lot of news the end of last year, rather the middle of last year, about this company really spearheading the return to nuclear power within the United States. So, you know, one of the things that I like about this company, taking a look at its supply chain, is that most of its suppliers are in the U.S., which means they don't have to deal with the political realities of dealing with parts of the world that are less stable. That's a good thing. They're a $702 million market cap company that has pretty minimal debt. And they had a run-up from last summer up until about September, where they came online with one of their low-enriched uranium production facilities about 2 months ahead of schedule. And since then, the relative strength has dropped off a little bit. And it looks like they bottomed out in about March, and now they're back up to about $44 a share. Now, looking at the relative valuation here, it looks like their price to book is 21.7. That means their price of their company is 21.7 times the assets that the company owns. The industry as a whole, roughly around 4. Its price to cash flow is 234.8. Listen, so this is a risky company, right? It is a small cap company that most people are pricing in that kind of growth, because if nuclear power becomes more of a part of our electrical grid, more a part of our power grid, this company will certainly benefit from it. So this is a growth name, and it will do well if growth continues to do well. It'll do well if nuclear power continues to do well. But for me, if you want to stay in it, if it's a small part of your portfolio, perfectly fine. If it's a large part of your portfolio, I would probably think about trimming it. I certainly would not buy more at this type of valuation. Thanks for the call. Now let's go to Richard in Santa Clarita, who has a question about IGR. Do you own it, or are you looking to buy it?
I have a little bit of it, a small position in it. Mm-hmm. The thing I wanted to ask, I don't know, I don't think I've ever heard anybody call in on this one, but I know that I believe that like in 2007, this stock was at about a little over $14. After the financial crisis in 2008, it went under $2. And then like 10 years ago, it was at the $9-$11 range. And today it's at the $5. It's really dropped. It's a closed-end REIT. My question, and it does pay, it pays a high dividend, and I've listened enough to know how y'all feel about, you know, high-yield dividends, that's not necessarily the way to go. But how would you assess this particular holding as part of a portfolio long-term? And, you know, it's fairly cheap now versus what it's been. I'm just wondering your overall take on this one.
Yeah, of course. So generally speaking, I think given what has happened to the real estate sector, now is actually a decent enough time to get into real estate. If you think that the macro environment is not going to be too challenging over the next couple of years, which I really don't think it is. A lot of people like to talk about, and we'll actually talk about this later on in the show, this disconnect between how people feel about the economy and how the economy actually is. So I'm actually having a little bit of difficulty finding this specific REIT income fund, so I can't look into the properties that they own, that this REIT owns. So I will tell you how to evaluate it yourself. So you want to know how concentrated this portfolio is, not just in types of investments, but also the regions over which it's investing. You're going to want to know the debt levels relative to the income that it actually has. So especially for these funds that were able to capitalize at low interest rates over the past 5 years, is the income of the fund actually going to be able to sustain the business if they have to roll those interest rates? So that comes to our third point, which is what is the makeup of that debt? So it looks like they only have $289 million in debt, which is a fair amount. But again, it's going to be more important for when is that debt maturing? How are they going to roll that debt? So those are really the three things you're going to want to look at. And I'm sorry that I am not able to look at that right now, but hopefully that helps you answer your question a little bit. Thanks for the call.
Okay, thank you.
Now we're going to do a short break, and on the other side, I will run down today's planned topics, one of which we just teased now, and talk about the market activity. Please remember that you can call anytime and leave your questions on the InvestTalk Voice Bank. If you're listening via our live stream or AM 1220 radio in the Silicon Valley, you can call now at 888-99-CHART.
In today's world, a variety of factors are affecting the stock markets. Serious investors know building a secure financial future requires hard work and determination. That's why now, more than ever, when it comes to the planning, execution, and maintenance of your portfolio, you need InvestTalk. With total downloads surpassing 50 million, each InvestTalk podcast should be one of your key financial planning and educational tools. InvestTalk is a free download, and hosts Justin Klein and Steve Peasley stand ready to provide their unbiased guidance and professional analysis developed from real-time data research and years of investing experience. 24/7, rain or shine, during smooth sailing or on rough weather days, the InvestTalk listener line is open and waiting for your questions. You set the agenda. Don't forget to call InvestTalk 888-99-CHART.
This is InvestTalk. Please tell your friends and family members that they can download our weekday podcast for free anytime at InvestTalk.com or iTunes, Google Play, and Spotify. And when you download and listen, please be sure to rate our podcasts. Our anytime listener line is open, and Steve and Justin are taking your calls now. 888-99-CHART.
We got a lot of ground to cover in the next 40 minutes or so, and here's some of what we have planned for you, time permitting. Our main focus point concerns this question: is the labor market healthy and sustainable? The Bureau of Labor Statistics reports that the U.S. economy added 303,000 jobs in March, the largest gain in more than a year. We'll talk about the U.S. job market, the labor market, and overall U.S. job openings. We'll also talk about what is wrong with the economy. Some people feel as though the economy is doing poorly, but all the data suggests otherwise. Why is that? We're also going to discuss the global dominance of just a handful of names in global market cap. We all know the S&P 500, which is one of the most watched indices, is dominated by a handful of names, but so is the MSCI All World Index. And should we have some time at the end of the show, we're going to talk about oil prices. There's been a rally. It was up 4.5%. WTI crude oil was up 4.5% last week, slightly down today. Is that rally sustainable and what is causing it? And of course, we're going to answer your finance and investment questions that come into 888-99-CHART, as well as some voice bank questions that came in earlier, one about options and capital gains, and the other about KBWB, the Invesco KBW Bank ETF. But before we do that, let's talk about the market today. So U.S. equities were kind of mixed today in a session that had a lower volume than expected, maybe due to the eclipse. Maybe people wanted to go outside, put on their glasses, and stare at the sun. But the S&P 500 closed slightly down, the equal weight index up over 20 basis points, and the Russell 2000 finishing up about 0.5%. So it was a better day for small caps than it was for large caps. This following a nearly 1% pullback last week, which was the biggest in about 3 months. Outperformers, it looks like miners did well, industrial metals did well. Looks like REITs did pretty well today. And Chinese tech, pharma, drugstores all did poorly. Treasuries were a little bit weaker today, and gold finished up about 20 basis points. Bitcoin up 6.6%. And like I mentioned earlier, crude oil was down about 60 basis points after rallying 4.5% last week. Overall, it looked to be a pretty quiet start to the week, not a lot of economic news. There is some news later this week in terms of the FOMC minutes later in the week. CPI is coming out. I think PPI comes out as well, and market sentiment. So all eyes will be on whether the up-to-date data, remember the Fed has been saying for quite some time that it's data dependent. All eyes will be on if that data will signal whether or not rate cuts will be coming sooner or later. Now, before we go to break, let's try and fit in another caller question now that came in earlier to 888-99-CHART.
I was wanting to get your opinion on KBWB. It's a bank ETF, Invesco Bank ETF. I was wondering where a good entry point on this would be, or if we're getting close to a good time to start picking up financial bank stocks. Your input is appreciated. Thank you.
Yeah, so KBWB is the Invesco KBW Bank ETF. And from the looks of it, it looks like it is a fairly broad, about 25 names, actually pretty concentrated exposure to the financial services industry. It looks like there's an index committee that selects names. You know how much I dislike that. If you listen to me, I prefer my indices to be transparent. And when an index is just selecting names, that's typically not the case. But when they do select those names, it looks like they use a market cap weighted approach. And because of that, the top 10 names make up about 60% of the portfolio. And they're doing all this for you to the tune of 35 basis points. From a market cap breakdown, it looks like 92% of the portfolio is in large cap. So looking at this, U.S. large cap names, 25 names, 60% of it concentrated in the top 10. Household names, Bank of America, Morgan Stanley, JP Morgan Chase. They're operating in a very liquid and inexpensive part of the U.S. market. And they're charging you 35 basis points. I think the XLF charges 8 basis points to do this in a passive way. And this is a passive fund. Although they're selecting by committee and creating these names, picking these names, they're only rebalancing quarterly. So it seems to me like with this fund specifically, you're paying near active management fees in a large cap ETF. Obviously, smaller ETFs, other markets, they're going to be more expensive. But this is near active fees for a passively managed fund. So I personally wouldn't pick up this fund. I think it's too expensive for what they're doing. I don't like that it's not that transparent. It's selected by committee. They do market cap weighted at the end, which is better than just randomly selecting weights, I guess. But overall, I would probably go with a different fund. Now, the other part of the question was, is now a good time to invest in financials? I think it is a good time to invest in financials on the upper end. I think the large banks are probably fine. We'll find out towards the end of this week when bank earnings start to come in, if it is a good time to invest in financials. But I don't necessarily agree with the market consensus that rates are going to be cut. I think I agree with Justin that rates are going to be secularly higher. Now, that doesn't mean that they're going to be higher than 5%, but they're certainly not going back down to zero. And so some of those smaller banks, some of those more concentrated banks may have some problems. So the spirit of this ETF, investing mostly in large caps, is good. I think if you want to invest in financials right now, you can look at the backbone of the industry. You can look at the names like the, you know, CME or names such as that, that not specifically CME, but names such as that, that would be the backbone for transactions within markets. Or you can be in larger banks. But overall, I'd be a little bit weary of those smaller names. And I certainly would not put any more money into this fund, given how expensive it is. Thanks for the call. Now we're going to a short break, and when we return, we will dig into today's primary focus point about jobs. But in the meantime, please feel free to call anytime, 888-99-CHART.
Every investor is working to build a secure financial future. How they get there and when they get there, that depends on many variables. The more you learn about how the market works, the better your chances. So don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Now, our main focus point today concerns jobs. And the question, is the labor market healthy and sustainable? So let's take a closer look at the U.S. job market. The last report points to a very healthy labor market, which is especially significant considering some of the challenges that have been facing the economy with inflation and the subsequent quick rise in rates. And to a lot of people's surprise, myself included, there hasn't been much labor market deterioration. In March alone, the U.S. saw an added 303,000 jobs and payrolls, marking the largest monthly gain since January of 2023. And this level of job growth, about 274,000 in the first quarter of 2024, significantly outpaces, get this, pre-pandemic 2019 by more than 100,000. All of this with the unemployment rate dropping to 3.8%, well below the historical low of 4%. Another positive sign, aside from unemployment staying low, and job creation continuing, is looking at real hourly wages. Real hourly wages, which takes wage inflation adjusted for price inflation, grew by 1.1% in February 2024 compared to the previous year, where it was below price inflation. And so even though these numbers suggest that more jobs are being created, that the labor market is robust, it's still not, let's say, as employee-friendly as it was in 2021 and 2022, right? You remember the Great Resignation era where, during the pandemic, people were leaving jobs. There was high demand. People were going and pretty much being able to negotiate pretty heavily in terms of the benefits they wanted, the pay they wanted, and there are a lot of labor openings. And so even though that's not the case, that's not a bad thing, because although the negotiating power of labor is not where it was in that time, this is a more sustainable outcome. This is more sustainable for a healthy job market, with consumer confidence up, spending continuing, and all of that fueling economic growth. So for investors, this and other broader economic trends should be encouraging. Additionally, although wage inflation is positive, right? We want wage growth to be positive. We all want more money. The pace of that has fallen, and that is one of the primary drivers of price inflation. If people are making more money, goods are going to cost more because people can pay more for those goods. And so all of this to say, CPI and PPI and PCE later in the month are going to be very important in the next couple months. Because with wage growth, real wage growth being positive, inflation falling, the labor market still being robust, it could provide the necessary comfort for the Fed to consider reducing borrowing costs in the near future should inflation itself not peak. Remember, this is a good thing. We want wages to go up, but too much too quickly could be bad for price inflation, and that's what the Fed's trying to avoid. Overall, the U.S. job market is demonstrating a lot of resilience and adaptability. For workers, this means continued opportunity and improving buying power. And for investors, the labor market's current trajectory, frankly, and the stable economic growth that we've had should be, for you, inspiring. I know there's a lot of people on the sidelines, a lot of people who have the impending sense of doom. And a lot of that is because of recency bias. People think of a recession, they think of 2008, they think everything is going down, right? And that's not how most recessions are. So just because you feel as though, just because the vibe economy is telling you that things are negative, something we'll talk about in our next talking point, doesn't mean that's the case. I think we can fit in one more caller question before we go to our next break, so let's try it right now.
Hey, this is James from Georgia. I wanted to ask a question. I was listening to the show on Friday, Luke. You were talking about cybersecurity, so I went ahead and bought some CrowdStrike. I got 3 shares of it, CRWD. What do you think about this? Hopefully, I think there's going to be a lot of growth, especially with the incident that just happened with Microsoft. It's very alarming. But I figured, heck, I don't have any of this in my portfolio, so I just jumped up and bought some. Did I buy the right one? Whatever information you can share with me, I greatly appreciate it. I hope you guys have a great day. Steve, we're praying for you.
So taking a look at CrowdStrike. CrowdStrike is, as the caller suggested, a cybersecurity company. And the first thing that I notice is over the past 5 years, they've issued a lot of shares, up from 210 million to 240 million. And because of that, they have very little debt. If you're funding through equity, you don't have to fund through debt. They have $793 million of debt on a $76 billion company. So that's certainly good. In terms of earnings, it looks like their earnings have been projected to increase over the next year and the subsequent years, so over the next 2 years. And the relative strength has been incredibly high, as has their cash flow progression. That's all looking good. The one thing that brings me pause, remember, it's not just about buying good businesses. It's about buying good businesses at reasonable valuations and then holding those businesses as they make more money, return money to shareholders, and maybe selling them for a profit. So taking a look at this, the price to earnings is pretty crazy. 77 times, price to book value 33 times. The industry average is 3. Listen, I can't tell you if this company is going to be worth more next week, next month than it is before. But what I can say is you have a better chance if you buy at fairer valuations. And this looks pretty overpriced to me. Thanks for the call. Now we're heading into a quick break. Hopefully we hear from more of you over the next 30 minutes or so. I look forward to it. I'm Luke Guerrero, and I'm ready to take your calls now.
Let's say you've been thinking about learning a new language. Okay, why? I mean, how would it come in handy? And where would you want to use it? Could it be that you have an upcoming international trip? Or maybe you want to connect with family members or friends from a different culture? I think you should know about Rosetta Stone. With millions of users, it's been the world's most trusted language learning program for 30 years. Rosetta Stone is available on your desktop or as an app with audio companion and the ability to download lessons offline. Rosetta Stone truly immerses you in the language you want to learn. It has a built-in, patented speech recognition engine called True Accent. So as you practice speaking, you'll get feedback on how well you pronounce words. With Rosetta Stone, you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. It's an intuitive process designed for long-term retention. You really learn to speak, listen, and think in your new language. Rosetta Stone is an amazing value, so your special skill set is within easy reach. You know you want to do this, so don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, InvestTalk listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off now at rosettastone.com/today.
In today's market, more than ever, you need unbiased investing guidance because it can help you achieve financial freedom. Well, you've come to the right place. InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Good evening, InvestTalk. I had another options question for you guys. When writing options, I've found a few companies that have been successful for me month after month, at least for the past year now. And my question is about capital gains. If I choose to roll those options into the next month, and then after that, and then the next for over a year, and then finally close out of those positions, would those be considered long-term or short-term capital gains? You know, since I've rolled them for over a year, I'll listen on the podcast. And thanks as always. Take care. Bye.
Unfortunately, you cannot beat the tax man. And rolling your options is going to be a trade, which is going to be a taxable event. So just because you're rolling it and rolling it and rolling it and then eventually buying it back doesn't mean you're going to defeat the tax man. So remember, always pay your taxes. And certainly this is options are a good way to make a little bit of income when you're selling options. But there are some tax consequences in the fact that they are short-term capital gains. So there is no avoiding that in this situation. Thanks for the call. Now, on the next Invest Talk, we'll look into this question: what could fewer rate cuts mean for stock valuations? Alongside the management of interest rates, a key challenge to the Fed is unwinding the quantitative easing used to support asset prices and economic activity over the last 15 years. That's tomorrow, but why don't we right now talk? Oh, sounds like we have another question coming up. And this question came in on our YouTube channel. We encourage all of our listeners and all of our viewers now to go on YouTube and leave some comments because we like to answer the questions that come in there. And this question is about 401ks. It says, I'm 30 and my wife is 29. She already has a 401k and automatically contributes. I just started working after grad school about 7 months ago, and I plan on pivoting to having my own business in about 10 years. For this reason, I don't utilize a 401k. But instead, I constantly contribute to a taxable brokerage so I don't have a penalty accessing these funds before I'm 59 and a half. Is this sound reasoning or am I making a mistake? This is an interesting question. So for most people, you will hear max out your 401k, max out your IRA, max out all of these things. I have a little bit of a different take. Max out your 401k up to what your employer contribution max is. You are throwing away free money if you don't do this. That's number one. But I think generally why retirement accounts are helpful are because they are forced savings, right? You're paying that penalty if you withdraw before 59 and a half with some exceptions. But generally you're paying that penalty. And so it forces you to keep those assets locked up. But although there are tax advantages, there's also another part of that, which is a cost, right? There's an opportunity cost. So in this instance, you want to have your own business in 10 years. If you were to throw all of your money into a retirement account, you're going to have to pay a penalty. I think this is a perfectly fine reason to use a taxable brokerage account. Because sometimes if you lock up all your money, you don't have access to it when an investment opportunity comes along. So again, should you be using your 401k? If your employer is giving you a match, absolutely you should be using it up until the point that match is maxed out. But after that, I have no problem given the reason why you need this money. It's for your business, for you using a taxable brokerage account. Thanks for the call. Now let's pivot over to our next talking point, which is also about the economy. And so there's a fascinating discrepancy that has emerged that I highlighted a little bit before, which is the American public's perception of the economy versus the reality of the economy. And so a recent poll done by the Wall Street Journal in swing states revealed that a staggering 74% of respondents believe that inflation has worsened over the past year, which is just not true. The centuries-old consumer price index decreased 3.2% in the 12 months through February, down from 6% a year earlier. So why is that? Well, interestingly enough, when they surveyed people to ask them what inflation meant, only half of them got it right. Only half of them realized it was the rate of change in prices. So when people tell you inflation is falling, they don't mean prices are falling. They mean the rate of increase is falling. Even more interesting, although the national economy is rated poorly, respondents view their own state economies positively. A dichotomy kind of reminiscent of how people disapprove of Congress, but they like their specific congressperson. And so this gap in economic reality and public perception raises an interesting question because it affects you as an investor as well. I mentioned it before. I hear from potential clients, and friends, family all the time, I want to invest money, but I'm worried there's going to be a recession. I'm worried there's going to be a depression. I'm worried about this. I'm worried about that. And one contributing factor to this is certainly the media environment we live in. I said it on Friday, and I'll say it again. People make more money by being bears. There is more money in being counter-positive, i.e. negative, than there is in being positive. And because of that, it kind of reinforces people's ideas, their negative perceptions about how the world is going. But for investors, I think this phenomenon underscores the importance of rationally thinking about your investments. You cannot let your emotions, your political ideology, any of these things get in the way of how you choose to invest your money. Because from a rational, objective perspective, it is not all doom and gloom like the talking heads would like you to think. Now let's head on over to another caller question, perhaps. Yeah, let's keep things moving and pivot back to the InvestTalk Voice Bank for a question that came in earlier from 888-99-CHART.
Hi, Justin and Luke. Good morning. This is Sid from Charlotte, North Carolina. My best wishes for Steve and his family. I have a question about Starbucks, ticker symbol SBUX. Currently, it is around 86. Looks to be a strong company, but I want to check all the fundamentals and the good entry point. I currently do not have this in my portfolio. If you can give me your suggestions, that would be great. Thank you. Have a great day. Bye-bye.
I don't think I have to mention what Starbucks is. Everybody knows Starbucks, the ubiquitous coffee maker that is everywhere, sometimes three of them on the same street corner. And over the past year or so, it looks like Starbucks has kind of lost some of its relative strength and its price has tumbled accordingly. And it kind of broke the support it had at around the 90 level. And so this is kind of in a price discovery phase now. So I wouldn't be buying Starbucks right now because you risk, as they always say, catching a falling knife. From a fundamental perspective, they only have $24 billion in debt on a nearly $100 billion market cap company, and they're not really levered that much. Their interest rate coverage ratio is 9.75. So it's not that bad at all whatsoever. But see, you're breaking this 90 right here, right? And so there could be some support at the 80 level, but I would wait to see what happens with this company because when you're losing something like this, your momentum's falling. Technically, it doesn't look bad. The price continues to go down in the short term. Thanks for the call. Let's play two in a row. Another one that came in earlier to 888-99-CHART.
Hi, Steve and Justin. This is Kevin calling from La Crescenta, California. I have a question regarding retirement and state income taxes. Currently, I reside in California, and I'm not at retirement age, but just kind of planning ahead for the future, thinking of establishing primary residence in a state with no state income tax. I'm wondering how or what are the requirements to do that? Like, is there a certain amount of time that you need to live in there in the new state before you can not pay income tax on whatever you take out of your IRA or 401k. And if you spend time in multiple states during retirement, how do you establish that one location, the one with no income tax, is your primary residence? Hoping you can help me plan for the future. Thank you.
So this is a very complicated question. I know for myself as a working person and anybody who's working, when I used to travel to different states to work, different states have different rules regarding how long you can be there before you start incurring income tax. I think New York might be 14 days. California actually might be one day. So it's incredibly complicated. And because of that, I have to defer to somebody who is a specialist in taxes. This is a very important question, something you're going to face down the road. But definitely, given the complexity of different state taxing regimes, also keeping in mind that when you do retire, tax law could be completely different. So this is definitely something that if you are curious about it, just from a learning perspective, you're going to want to consult a tax advisor now. But that doesn't mean that the rules that exist today are going to exist when you retire. Thanks for the call. And we talked a lot about jobs today, but I also want to talk about the market more broadly. And according to recent data from the MSCI, market concentration has hit its highest levels in decades. 10 stocks, the 10 largest stocks in the MSCI All Country World Index, which is going to be everything in the world, every stock in the world that they cover, now accounts for a staggering 19.5% of the benchmark. 19.5%. What was that figure in 2016? 9%. And this is the largest it's been. It surpassed the peak of the dot-com era in March of 2000. And this growing concentration poses potential risks for investors. Because when you think about investing in a broad index, one of the reasons you're doing it is because of diversification, right? And so this goes back to one of the lessons that we like to preach show after show, which is knowing what you own. And so this is an important part of it, because if you're invested in the MSCI All World Index, you are highly exposed to 10 companies. If you're invested in the S&P 500, you're highly exposed to 7 companies. And so, you know, in a higher level sense, the debate around this issue kind of brings a light to concerns reminiscent of the robber baron era in the 1900s, when the 10 largest stocks accounted for 38.1% of the U.S. market. And a lot of that concentration today isn't driven by the same types of companies that drove that concentration before, right? Today, it's mostly large tech companies that have these natural monopolies. Remember, I like to say that tech is a winner-take-all space. And regulators have, for the reason that the statutes on the books didn't really foresee these type of monopolies, regulators haven't really been able to address this as much. So what does this mean for investors? Well, it's very challenging to predict the timing and the shift away from these dominant mega cap stocks more towards smaller value, more profitable companies. But that doesn't mean you shouldn't be aware of just how concentrated a lot of people's portfolios have become. I said it before, let's say that you are invested in S&P 500 company, 40% of your portfolio, and you take that other 60%, and you say, well, I really like tech. Well, you're already highly exposed to tech. Now you're highly concentrating in a way that you may not even be aware you are doing. And so in periods of heightened volatility, active funds tend to do better than their passive counterparts. But this shift in market dynamics invites reconsideration, because just because something has done better over the past 5 years, over the past 10 years, where the world was significantly different, doesn't mean that'll be the same for the next 10 years. Investing is more than about return. It's also about diversifying. It's also about managing your risks. Now, this is InvestTalk with more than 58 million downloads. And now our podcast is also available in video format on YouTube. Search InvestTalk, where you can see all of the charts and data we use to answer your questions. But hang on, our work continues in 30 seconds.
Every investor is working to build a secure financial future.
Would this be an opportune time to get into annuities?
Everyone's situation is different.
Get your thoughts on CRM, Salesforce.
And so are their questions.
And I was just calling for your assessment of Blackstone Incorporated.
24/7, rain or shine, InvestTalk is made better by the power of you. 888-99-CHART.
Yes, my name is Carl Cecilwick. I'm with at Alpharetta, Georgia. I have an annuity that's coming due the 10-year mark, and I wonder if I should switch that over to my Roth. If you could give me an answer on that, I'd appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah, so you really have several options here, right? You can take the lump sum withdrawal. You could shift it over to your Roth. I think a lot of that depends on your financial situation. Again, this is a taxable event, so I think this is something that is probably better addressed with somebody who is a tax specialist. I don't want to give you the wrong answer here. I don't want you to incur a bunch of additional taxes that you should not otherwise incur. So although I do appreciate the call, I think this is better suited for somebody who's a tax specialist. Thanks for the call. Now let's grab another break, one more, and I hope you call in now at 888-99-CHART.
No two portfolios are alike, and every investor has a unique set of circumstances. So don't forget to call InvestTalk. 888-99-CHART.
Hi, my name is Jackie, and I'm just calling because I was wondering if I could get your opinion on two stocks. One is Myers Industries, MYE is the ticker symbol, and the other is Clarus Corp, CLAR. Just wanted to know your opinion on which you thought was the better company and a good entry point for that. Thanks. Bye.
So Myers Industry, MYE, and Clarus Corp, CLAR, are very different companies. Myers Industry is a polymer products company. They manufacture and trade polymer products, so industrials, for industrial use. And Clarus Corp manufactures outdoor products, ski, mountain, sports categories, lifestyle products, right? So two very different types of companies. Taking a look at a straight-up comparison of them, they're both relatively fairly valued. I mean, 2.8 is not a crazy price to book, 0.86. Their margins, there's some stark differences. Clarus, net margin is negative. Net margin is projected to be negative next year. Myers, positive and a little bit of growth next year as well. From a debt perspective, it looks to me like, from a margin perspective overall, it looks to me on a pre-tax basis, Myers is actually doing better as well. And from a sales perspective, the revenue growth on Myers has been better than Clarus also. So thinking back and taking a step back about what these two companies are doing, what we know is, generally speaking, consumers have exhausted, especially on the lower end, a lot of their pandemic savings, right? So the first types of companies that are probably going to take hits in terms of revenue growth are going to be ones like Clarus. The more expensive sporting companies, right? Skiing, mountain biking, climbing a little bit inexpensive, but these lifestyle companies. And also from a fundamental perspective, I don't think Clarus is as strong. Its relative strength is also at a 20 right now. Let's take a look at where Myers is. Myers's relative strength is sitting at a 90. So it's a lot stronger. I think based on fundamentals, based on margins, if I had to pick between these two, I would pick Myers. Based on momentum, I would also pick Myers. Strength, Myers. Based on the macro environment, I would pick Myers as well. So it seems pretty simple out of these two. I would definitely pick Myers. Thanks for the call. Now, before we wrap up today, I wanted to briefly talk about something we already mentioned earlier, which is oil prices and the implications for investors. So oil has had a huge run-up. Right, there's been an 18% rise this year in Brent crude, up to $91 a barrel, and a 21% rise in West Texas Intermediate, WTI crude. 4.5% of that was last week. And a lot of these developments have come in the wake of increasing tensions in the Middle East. We talk about that from time to time, right? You have the Israeli-Hamas conflict. You also have a potential conflict with Israel and Iran. And OPEC, the cartel firmly controlling the supply and artificially trying to make prices higher. So what does that mean for where oil is going? Frankly, I think it's probably going to stay high for quite some time. Why is that? Well, we mentioned the first part of that. The first part of that is geopolitical tensions. That is going to drive oil prices higher. I think that where we are internationally, not just in the United States, the economy is pretty robust, right? Demand hasn't fallen that much. Industrial demand, the ISM manufacturing showed that industrial output was in a expansionary phase for the first time in a long time. And I think at a certain point, globally, we're going to follow suit as well. So demand for oil still is not where it could be over the next 2 years from an industrial production global perspective. And do I think that tensions in the Middle East are going to simmer down anytime soon? Well, they haven't for quite some time. I think that given where the US oil production is, those types of effects are secondary now to the primary effect, which is global demand. And I don't see global demand falling off. I actually see over the next 2 years, global demand increasing. Now, I'm Luke Guerrero, and this completes another episode of Invest Talk. We thank you for listening, and we encourage you to tell your friends and family members about our free podcast downloads, as well as our show available on YouTube. For the podcast, you can get it anytime at iTunes, Google Play, and Spotify. And be sure to rate and review and leave a comment where we may answer your question on the show. Remember to tell your friends and family, like I said about YouTube, we're very excited about that. We love showing you all the data we can. And we look forward to seeing you again tomorrow. Independent thinking, shared success. This is InvestTalk. Good night.
InvestTalk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Steve Peasley is president, and Justin Klein is chief executive officer of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.